This week, volatility returned to the markets on unexpected comments from the FOMC meeting. Welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, with you for this November 1st broadcast. Well, the holiday season is fast approaching, bringing positive seasonal biases to the markets as investors anticipate strong jewelry demand and corporate sales. Will this year bring holiday cheer to our portfolios? My first featured guest, Louis Navalier, thinks so. He says the impressive stock market rally will likely continue well into the new year. Have you seen American Blackout, the much-anticipated National Geographic docudrama illustrating several families struggling to survive amid a nationwide power grid failure? Does your family have a backup power generator or solar panel array? How would you all survive if suddenly the electricity failed? My next featured guest, Rich Dad Robert Kiyosaki, takes time away from stockpiling food to share his preparation tactics. He's not selling his gold or silver, not at these levels. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear editorial. And if you'd like personalized investing advice, I plan to be a registered investment advisor before the end of this month. So we've already accepted a few requests. You can send an email request to gsr@hughes.net. That's gsr@hughes.net. And we'll send over a quick questionnaire to gauge your risk tolerances and investing preferences. Right now, we're giving preference to our Alpha Stock Newsletter subscribers. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with the Market Weatherman Report. Cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals exchanges amid a U.S. dollar rally. Traders interpreted comments from the FOMC meeting as hawkish, suggesting that Fed tapering could come sooner rather than later. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold shed about $35, ending the trading session at $13.15 an ounce. Silver dropped about 90 cents, ending at $21.87. Gold remains backdated on the LBMA exchange 13 consecutive days in a row, three contracts deep. Positive seasonal factors could give the precious metals markets a boost. Christmas, Hanukkah, and related holiday purchases tend to support price during this time of the year. November is the strongest month in the last decade, returning about 5% on average. Plus, Indian festivals, including Diwali, are traditionally gold positive. China bought more than 100 tons of gold from Hong Kong for a fifth straight month in September as demand for bullion, bars, and jewelry remains robust. Meanwhile, better-than-expected domestic economic reports helped to buoy the beleaguered U.S. dollar, which rebounded from a multi-week meltdown. Solid economic numbers convinced some traders that QE-related stimulus efforts could be curtailed sooner than expected. Government data showed that business activity in the U.S. Midwest improved last month, while U.S. jobless claims declined last week. Although the Fed on Wednesday held stimulus steady, citing the weak economy, policymakers noted that bond purchases could be reduced as soon as next month. Two major investment banks now expect the Fed to curtail bond purchases by January. Elsewhere, gold consumption in India, still the world's largest consumer, amounted to 20% of total global demand last year. That's according to the World Gold Council. The government plans to maintain an 800-ton quota, down from 845 tons last year. Lower supply in India has caused a $120 ounce premium explosion. Closer to home, American Eagle coin sales are approaching a new record, while silver American Eagle sales blasted through last year's sales figure by over 5 million ounces. That's according to Blanchard and the U.S. Mint. American Eagle gold coin sales increased from 13,000 in September, while American Eagle silver coin sales were up from 3 million to 3.15 million. Gold Krugerrands are trading at premiums as well, around 5%, and gold bars are trading at about 3.5% premiums. Analysts cite growing investor concern following the government shutdown and debt ceiling debacles. Simply put, investors turn to gold and silver when the government is unstable and no other asset class seems safe. But a growing number of investors recognize the threat posed by bail-ins, government shutdowns, and unregulated debt ceilings, as well as corporate malfeasance. Private gold stockpiles have increased to nearly $2 trillion. That's according to the World Gold Council figures. But before visions of market bubbles come to mind, consider these facts. The bond market is 45 times the size of the gold market at $90 trillion, while the stock indexes are 25 times the size at $50 trillion. This means that if only 1% of investments flow from stocks and bonds into gold, the yellow metal would soar at least 50%. But if the more traditional 10% portfolio weighting of precious metals comes back into play, as many now expect to happen, gold would blast higher by over fivefold, at least $6,000 an ounce, assuming that speculators ignored the advance, as highly levered investors and everyday investors poured mountains of funds into the sector. Meanwhile, with a new record of 48 million Americans, that's 23 million households, on food stamps today, the total annual cost is actually much less than the $85 billion monthly toxic debt buying spree by the Fed. In other words, the Fed's spending much more each month than the entire annual bill for the food stamp program. Still, stringent benefit cuts to food stamp recipients came to pass on Friday. Congress pulled $5 billion from the program that helps 1 in 7 Americans avoid hunger pains and even starvation. The president of the Food Bank for New York said that members are panicking in anticipation of droves of hungry families and much longer lines at soup kitchens. The SNAP Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is expected to cut around $36 a month per household. While the reduction may appear trivial at first blush, several meals per month will be lost in each family. On Tuesday on Capitol Hill, protesters opposed the cuts to the food stamps, demanding that funding be reinstated. SNAP participation has doubled over the past decade and increased nearly 25% over just the last 4 years. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, the top story obviously moving the markets this week was the U.S. dollar rebound. Traders picked up the greenback at discounted prices in anticipation of Fed QE tapering. For the rest of this report and next week's stock picks, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly sunny skies appeared over the equities exchanges for the fourth consecutive week. Investors added shares on positive economic comments from the FOMC meeting. By Friday's closing bell on the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials added 170 points, 1%, finishing at 15,570. The S&P 500 added 2 points, ending at 1761, while the NASDAQ bucked the trend, shedding 21 points, 0.5% for the week, ending at 3922. Elsewhere, continuing the alarming trend reported in this newsletter for several months, the head of the Eurozone finance ministers said this week that governments must embrace legislation supporting bail-ins. A bail-in is just a euphemistic term for government and corporate wealth confiscation from an unsuspecting and ill-informed populace. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, according to the 7-component fear sentiment index, greed is clearly re-entering the market, but still remains at somewhat manageable levels. For next week's forecast and all the stock picks, be sure to log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Robert Kiyosaki and Louis Navalier. Louis Navalier joins me with his take on the domestic economy. He's the editor of 4 leading stock advisory newsletters, including Louis Navalier's Quantum Growth, Emerging Growth, Global Growth, and Blue Chip Growth. Welcome back, Mr. Navalier.
It's an honor to be here.
You know, over the past 2 years, the equities markets have outperformed virtually every other asset class. You have been consistently bullish on the sector. What set of factors convinced you that equities were preparing for a run, and where do you think they're headed next?
Well, we're headed off higher through April, largely because of seasonal patterns. You know, markets are just better during the holidays. We have often an early January effect. It starts before Thanksgiving. There's a lot of year-end pension funding, and then pension funding in the new year. So we're just kind of hitting that sweet spot for the market. The other thing that's happening is the earnings finally showed up. You know, there were no earnings till the third quarter. On the second quarter, the S&P sales were up 2.1, but excluding financials, earnings were down 1.4. And so earnings are finally showing up, and they're going to improve in the fourth quarter. And so that kind of gives the market its missing ingredient. And then on top of that, we got all that Fed pumping that's still going to go on because the economy's not hitting on all cylinders. So we got the Fed pump, we got earnings, we got a strong seasonality. Our testing shows that the market is getting more narrow. There's going to be fewer stocks going higher, and that's nothing to be alarmed about. That's just how, as markets rise, they get smart. It's like a race, you know. The longer the race goes, the fewer runners will be leading the race. So the pack's thinning out, and the creme de la creme is rising.
So you expect investors to rotate funds into the hot sectors du jour. The tide may be lifting all boats, but after a while, it's really the top boat, if you will, that wins the race. Well, you know, the FOMC maintained the status quo, as I mentioned, to compensate, I guess, for the blow dealt to the economy by that three-week-long government shutdown. The Fed could provide the rocket fuel required, I think, to lift the markets, at least into your time frame. Any other comments, then, specifically on the FOMC report?
Not really. Here's the deal, just to kind of cut to the chase. First of all, Janet Yellen's a dove. She's obsessed with the unemployment situation. That's the Fed's mandate, is to fix that. But there's a huge data problem. 70% of all new jobs we're creating in America today are temp jobs. So if somebody gets two temp jobs, that counts as two workers. According to the household survey, a much broader survey than the payroll survey, it covers the cash economy, you know, the gardener, the housekeeper, or, you know, other people who might get paid in cash, the underground economy. That's shown over 400,000 less jobs created this year than the payroll survey. Every single employment survey, ADP, Gallup, is showing far less job creation than the payroll report. And there is a real problem with the data. The Fed in previous FOMC meetings has said that we might have to lower their unemployment target from 6.5 to lower. So it's a mess. So the Fed's going to have the pump on until the unemployment's fixed, and that might be 2 or 3 years.
I also wanted to shift gears for a moment into the U.S. dollar market. You know, it fell to the lowest point in almost 2 years versus the euro last week on expectations of continued Fed debt purchases and holding that interest rate policy near zero. Now, investors appear to have factored in continued monetary operations. And as you mentioned, Janet Yellen scheduled, I guess, sometime next month, known for being quite dovish.
Yeah, quantitative easing to eternity, essentially. The dollar is very interesting. The dollar has been in a multi-decade slide. The only reason it rallies is when there's a liquidity crisis. So there was a liquidity crisis in 2008, and when Europe was seizing some Cyprus bank accounts, the dollar rallied. But when all the dust settles, we have lower rates than the rest of the world. There is higher rates. That undermines the dollar. Our government shutdown and infighting didn't look good to the rest of the world. And then, of course, President Obama missed an Asian trip. You know, China's there, Russia's there, exerting their influence. No one from the U.S. was there. And obviously, we subbed out our foreign policy to Russia on Syria, and Saudi Arabia's mad at us, and I can go on and on. So all these things have contributed to undermine the dollar. Having websites that don't work and things like that doesn't help either. So the more we embarrass ourselves, the more the dollar is going to get weak. But that's a wonderful thing. The weak dollar creates windfall profits for big multinationals. And if I had any complaint about the market a few months ago, it was a strong dollar. So now that the dollar is on a slippery slope, it's wonderful. And that's one of the main reasons earnings are going to continue to improve.
The Chinese agencies in how called for de-Americanization of the global currency, proposing a new international reserve currency. They downgraded, as I'm sure you saw, the U.S. dollar from A to A minus, a trend we continue to see, particularly amid the government shutdown and debt ceiling fiasco. I mean, I really think this has far less to do with shaky web pages and more to do with intense government profligacy. You know, the Fed balance sheet now approaching $4 trillion and likely to put another $1 trillion.
Yeah, based on what they've already pre-announced, will be over $5 trillion, up from $800 billion back in 2008. The Fed monetized 75% of all new debt last year. They own 20% of all the Treasury debt. They own more than China and Japan combined. The Treasury sells the debt. The Fed buys it. We're not fooling anybody else. And Ben Bernanke was put in an impossible situation, so we knew it would be good till he left. Janet Yellen, to be candid with you, is she's a dove that likes her statistics, so I think she'll be very, very precise. One of the reasons the Fed misled the markets this year is they thought with the economy was booming. And so back in May when Bernanke dropped his bomb, he had this rosy economic forecast that didn't materialize. So he quickly reversed himself in June. That was a Bernanke bounce. And the Fed just doesn't know how to tap the brake. You know, we're in uncharted territory. We're pumping, Europe's pumping, Britain's pumping, Japan's pumping, and no one knows how to take their foot off the brake. This is going to be fascinating to watch, but at least Janet will be data-driven. It would be nice if the government could have some good data. I mean, the government data we get nowadays is just horrible. I mean, it's not only is it the payroll reports, things like retail sales. They tell you things are horrible at Home Depot and Lowe's, but they have the strongest same-store sales since 1999. So there's a lot of weird stuff in the government data nowadays. I'm one for thinking we might want to buy the government a computer, at least at the Commerce Department, Labor Department.
No, that mirrors my sentiments exactly with regard to data. It's like the computer programming and computer science cliche, garbage in, garbage out. Unfortunately, if our new chairwoman receives ridiculous numbers that really don't reflect the current state of the economy, basing decisions on data, which I don't know many folks who actually even use much government data in their reports anymore. I mean, you can't even run a basic multilinear regression with reliable results.
The seasonal adjustments have gotten to be a real problem. And, you know, I subscribe to independent economists like HFE Economics, Ian Shepherdson, things like that, and they're just all baffled. Yardini's another guy I read. It's almost becoming comical. And there's other things. You know, in the last 4 years, disability claims exceed payroll job growth every month in the last 4 years, except for 3 months. You know, I had an interesting story. I sold one of my divisions, about $1.6 billion management, so I let some people go. And I said, if you want a job, go work for the people that bought the assets. One of my guys I laid off was a USC football jock. He's got 2 national championships rings. He's 57, but he works out all the time, goes to the gym, and still benches 340 pounds, and the first thing he does, he goes straight to disability. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with him, you know. So, you know, there's some weird things going on in our economy. The job market is just, I think it's beyond the Fed fixing, to be candid with you.
It certainly looks that way. We're starting to see some frightening statistics, numbers approaching 80 and 90 million able-bodied folks not working, sitting on the sidelines, half of American households receiving some type of federal government assistance, and even those numbers may be tame.
And like down here in Florida, you know, they sign up a lot of seniors for food stamps because they want them to know it's available for them. And they got a quota. They got to sign up 150 people a month. So that's their quota. So if you're not signing up sufficient people.
It's a perfect segue into the next hot button issue here. Friday, November 1st, marks the first official day of food stamp tapering. Now, while it's common knowledge that benefits will decline on average 5.5%, what's not widely disseminated is that many cards will be completely cut off. How many cards? Well, as many as millions. That is an official tally here. Well, there is that little-known work requirement. Congress passed the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act of 1999. There's a mouthful. Which added a work requirement for many folks to obtain stamps. And what this meant was that adults and able-bodied people without dependents must work at least 20 hours per week or be enrolled in a federally approved job training program. And so millions of those folks simply will find that their SNAP cards don't work as soon as Friday. There was also another group of folks whose cards will either not work or be curtailed who were very close to the food stamp limit. Over the past decade, many people who didn't qualify for food stamp EBT cards were given cards because they were approaching the level the government officials, you might say, bent the rules a bit to help them out. Well, they're going to find that cards are not working. So some analysts expect food stamp and EBT riots in America as soon as Friday. I'd like your outlook on the situation, please.
Well, that was the Walmart crisis. You know, they had a little riots in Walmart. You know, I don't have those kind of retailers, so it's not going to bother my particular portfolio. I do have Costco. Costco's really more of a luxury retailer, but you can't have the gravy train running forever. But, yeah, the Family Dollars, the Dollar Generals, the Walmarts, this could be a serious problem for them. We're entering unknown territory.
We certainly are. And I'd like to shift over to the precious metals sector. You know, after 24 difficult months, there are signs that suggest the bull market could be reasserting itself, including gold backwardation, 10 backward dated days in a row consecutively here, as well as we're seeing some improvement in the gold and silver shares. We're seeing a degradation of the U.S. dollar. Plus, as we mentioned, the new dovish Fed chairwoman, rotation of funds away from the generational bond market into stocks and potentially the metals, and extremely oversold sentiment and technical conditions.
As the dollar gets weak, commodity prices go up. So one of the things that was hurting the dollar hurting gold several months ago was a strong dollar. Now that the dollar's weak, it's firming up all commodity prices like gold, silver, everything. Even oil's artificially high right now because commodities are priced in dollars. There's no doubt that gold tried to make a base around 1300, and it's bounced off that base very, very well. On top of that, anytime someone gets mad at a central bank or there's uncertainty in the world, gold tends to do well. There's also continued threats of a South African strike, so we really like platinum. So I think there's a good foundation under gold. I think it's a good time to nibble on it, as well as platinum. But this base building process might go on for a while. So don't be surprised if it's only at 1400 a year from now. The bottom line is we're actually got in the gold business, I think, since the last time I talked to you. I signed up with a firm that does competitive bidding. They do it for Merrill Lynch and Credit Suisse, and now they do it for us. Why we got in the gold business is not so much we're gold bugs, although we got a lot of great articles on NadlerGold.com, because one of my editors is very good at that. So we got a lot of interesting data in there. But why we got in is we're trying to squeeze the spreads. The markup on gold can be quite high. So we have a competitive bidding system so everybody can see what the best bid is. And this is also why I'm in the bond business. I have a $1 billion bond business squeezing spreads. You get a higher yield. So we are trying to help people with their metals investing. And, of course, they can take delivery or store it.
Wanted to ask you about the fiscal deal passed by Congress to reopen the government and circumvent that $16.4 trillion limit on borrowing. Many folks are aware, well, that the issue has passed for the time being, but I think it's less well known that this merely suspended the debt limit. They never actually settled on a limit. There's no dollar amount set as to how much the government can accumulate. In fact, they spent several hundred billion just during that shutdown, we find out later. Although it may seem like an insignificant nuance, I think Americans now have little clue as to how much debt their government is going to be piling up between now and February 7th of next year. I'd like your opinion on this situation.
Well, obviously, this is one of the things that's undermining the dollar, that we always kick the can down the road. I don't think they were so much arguing over the deficit ceiling as just that they have to do something, come up with a grand bargain. And, of course, if they do the famous grand bargain, they're going to do it after the midterm elections. So I don't think anything will get done between Patty Murray and Paul Ryan. But all the shenanigans Jacob Blue was playing on accounting were just shocking. You know, we saw month after month before we hit the ceiling that there was no debt, because he was borrowing from here, borrowing from there. Then he said, I'm running out of accounting tricks. I mean, Jacob Lew is one of the most corrupt, devious people on the planet. I can't stand the guy. You know, he blew up part of Citigroup. He lost $20.1 billion in 2008. He's one of the pioneers of leveraged debt. All of his investors got wiped out at 97% of their money. The only thing that he did better than, you know, the Bernie Madoffs or the Tom Petters or the other people out there is at least he got the government to bail out Citigroup. So as long as Jacob Lew is Treasury Secretary, I would not be bullish on the U.S. dollar. We do have a joke in our business that just because he blew up Citigroup doesn't blow up our economy. But it's a serious problem. I mean, we have a Treasury Secretary that's out of control. He lies in front of Congress.
I'd like to shift over to the delays they're talking about as far as delaying the debt ceiling and threat of further government shutdowns. Whether you think this could portend a Detroit-like national bankruptcy in our distant future?
No, I don't think we'll go that far. I think what makes America a great place is of our 50 states, 30-year pro-business. And we're going to screw up, you know, California or Detroit or other things. But in the end, hopefully somebody will have a better model. And we're a younger society than most. The immigration does work better here than does in other countries. Not that it's perfect. There's plenty of problems. But as long as the United States remains a beacon of the world where people want to come here, they want to go to school here, They want to bring their capital and money here. Hopefully we can grow our way out of our mess. Already we have more debt per capita than Europe does, but I think Americans in general are more optimistic. So hopefully we can grow our way out of the mess. But, you know, we do have more people receiving federal aid now than working. Obviously there's a lot of problems. You know, in California, there's a certain percent of the population, 25% of a certain percent of the population doesn't even have bank accounts anymore, you know. So the joke is, are the check cashing stores that efficient, or maybe they're part of the cash economy and getting their benefits. So, you know, there's a lot of weird things going on in America. You know, I should not be able to fire high paid people, or lay off high paid people that I know are men, you know, are just really sharp, and they shouldn't be able to get aid. I mean, in California, you can get disability from acute stress from commuting. There are doctors who sign off you can't handle getting on the freeway anymore, and you get your 900-a-month disability. That's all draining Social Security. So if I was a retired person, I would be alarmed. They have already messed with everybody's inflation-adjusted adjustments. That's called the chain-weighted CPI. They're going to be curtailing those. But hopefully we'll get some leadership from our states, and hopefully maybe one of these governors will lead us out of the mess we're in one day.
Well, to begin with, the California acutely stressed commuters, in North Carolina, we call them telecommuters. We actually telecommute to work.
I'd rather they be part of that, you know, virtual economy than go get disability. You know, actually, I met your governor, Pat McCrory, when he was mayor of Charlotte. I actually had a friend's birthday party, and he's a very competent guy. I know he's been pushing some people's buttons there in the state, but, you know, he's a pretty competent guy, and I don't know if he'll go to the national stage. Obviously, for a politician, he was one of the nicest ones I ever met.
But I'd also like to backtrack a moment to your comments that I thought were quite positive. It was a breath of fresh air with regard to the United States and noting 30 pro-business states. Perhaps people will vote with their pocketbooks as well as with their feet and, you know, make a shift to areas that are more pro-business instead of just giving up on the United States altogether.
Yeah. You know, there's a rumblings that the whole South may be tax-free one day, become all a big tax-free zone from Louisiana to, you know, Mississippi, Alabama, all the way over to South Carolina. Sorry, I don't think I included North Carolina in that. But so, I mean, you know, of course, when you do that, you have taxes on other things, and, you know, whether they get from sales or property taxes and things, but or vehicle fees and things. But the bottom line is, you know, like when I'm in Chattanooga, they're all happy. They stole Amazon from Texas, you know. So if we've got Tennessee preying on Texas, that's a good thing. You know, I have a business in Reno, Nevada. We prey on California all the time. So it's and the state of Washington, too. You know, like in Reno, Microsoft's the biggest employer in town because they run all their money through Reno, so they don't have to pay a 2% tax in the state of Washington. So on their gross revenue. So then somehow we got Amazon there, another Washington company. And we got, you know, Apple, Oracle, Intel, Cisco. They all keep their treasury there. They escape the California state taxes. And then the Intuit founder is my neighbor. So, you know, it's a big world. And the fact that capital goes to where it's most welcome is refreshing. And, you know, and then, of course, a lot of our companies keep their money overseas because they don't want to repatriate the money because they don't want to pay extra taxes. So, because they've already paid taxes all over the world. So I just think, you know, we'll get somebody pro-business down the road here. You know, the government is not messing with the private sector as much because taxes are capped. I realize if I'm in the health business, I'm being messed with. But outside of that, one sixth of our economy, you know, the government is hopefully going to stay out of the way.
Well, I hope that any teachers that we have and professors listening to the show will take to heart some of your comments here and remember to try to pass along, although it's politically incorrect today, to your students, that it is the business sector that creates the profits that allow government to exist, that government does not produce anything. I think this is something we've forgotten today. I think that starts with our education system. I mean, we really need for our teachers and professors to let everyone be aware of the fact that it may not be the exciting thing to talk about, but at the end of the day, it is the entrepreneur and the big businessman producing the output and creating the jobs, not government.
Yeah, and you know, high school economics is called the velocity of money. It's how fast money changes hands. And if there's uncertainty, we tend to hoard our money, and the velocity of money slows down. On the other hand, if we're happy and we're busy spending, the velocity of money picks up. You know, Britain is the best case study of this. They had a heat wave in the summer. That got them out and about spending more. Then Mr. Murray won Wimbledon. That made him happy because he was a Brit. And then they had a new king born, I think Prince George, and so that made them all happy. And their retail sales have exploded, and the economy's booming. I've always had a joke that if Joe Biden became president, might be good for the economy because he's so funny. Not that he, you know, I'm not talking about his policy, I'm just talking about his attitude. When you go to the voting booth, we want you to vote for not incompetent people, but happy people. I think we learned this last election that as competent as Mr. Romney was, he just didn't get the vote out. So, unfortunately, we have this pop star culture, and it's going to be, I guess, we only want to elect pop stars, so... Apparently, Christie thinks he's a pop star. Maybe Rand Paul will get some young people to vote for him. It'll be very hard for the GOP next time because it looks like it's going to be Hillary, and that's the gal swung last election. And if Hillary runs, I think he's just going to get a lot of the female votes. So it's really in the hands of the women to pick somebody.
No, I'll have to leave the politics to you. That's not my forte. But I will say that we appreciate your comments today, and I'd like for you to, since you seem to have so many irons in the fire here, tell folks what it is that you'd like to share with them with regard to contact information and what's going on with the Navalier empire.
Well, Navalier basically is still known as a good risk-adjusted manager. We're most famous for large cap, where Lipper gives us a 5 in preservation capital. That's the highest rating. But we do dividend management. We do tactical management. We go in and out of the market. We're very good at international management. We did sell our ETF management because we were worried that some of the ETF firms were blowing bubbles under key stocks. You know, the excess valuation you see in Tesla nowadays at over 10 times sales, 440 times forecasted earnings, I would blame the NASDAQ 100, the QQQ, for that. I would also blame equally weighted ETFs or revenue weighted ETFs. And so what's happening out there is Wall Street's creating these vehicles for people to invest in, where they are chasing the strongest sales momentum, where they're chasing an equal weight so Tesla gets the same weight as a Ford does. But no one's looking under the hood at the valuations. You know, we don't pay a premium for our growth. I mean, we have better growth in the market, but we don't pay a premium for it. So I think, you know, there is some froth in this market. I'm refreshed that the Tesla CEO and the Netflix CEO keeps telling their investors that their stocks are overvalued, okay? I think that kind of candor is refreshing. They're also trying to protect themselves against class action lawsuits. But I think as this market goes higher, it's like a party, and it's going to thin out. And you want to be with the creme la creme. You don't want to be with you know, this market's getting smart for a change, and so I really like it. And I also like the fact that earnings are getting better.
No, I think it's an excellent assessment with one proviso, and that is if you take a very close look at those quarterly revenues, I'm sure you notice it was something like 1,300%.
Mercedes owns 10% of them. You know, they've got an Apple executive over there now, and the joke is that their screen's bigger than any Apple iPod, but iPad, I mean. But, you know, if Mercedes is the logical buyer, but, you know, Mr. Musk is a very feisty fellow, but he's a brilliant PR guy. And at that price, I would certainly sell, but most companies won't pay that price to buy. So I think there'll be more of a joint venture. I would be shocked. No one's going to buy them out these valuations. It just doesn't make sense. But it is a good car. You know, one caught on fire in Seattle recently, but it got in a wreck. But the car did tell the person to exit the car, so that was nice of it. I have a car with lithium batteries in it. You just can't penetrate the batteries. It's simple as that. They're hot. And that's why the car burned up. And then at least they've had the good batteries. You know, some of the other cars had bad batteries. But, you know, Porsche, Tesla, Nissan, they all are using the good lithium batteries. They come from Samsung, and they're the ones that make the best.
No, I think that's also another sector. We don't have time for that today, maybe in a future episode or installment. But definitely the solar industry, as I'm sure you know, one of the hottest, if not the hottest sector for quite some time. And we've been following several that have just been moving exponentially, that we're late to the party. Well, Mr. Navalier, we want to thank you for your comments today and wish you continued success, sir.
Great. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks again.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show the best-selling author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad book series, Robert Kiyosaki. Welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I love talking to you guys.
You know, let's begin, if we could, with the psychology of winning. You've delved into this matter in some detail in recent years, and no matter how successful one is, one can always use some improvement. Please tell folks how to change their mindset and outlooks to maybe that of more of a winning posture.
I can talk about money, you know, because and I don't win at everything in life, obviously, but with money, I like to win. And I like to start this four kinds of people in the world on any subject. And one is the person who must win. The second type of person is the person who must be right. And they don't always win simply because they get stuck at being right. The third type of person is a person who must be liked. And another person is a person who must be comfortable. So depending upon the subject, like let's take working out at the gym. My battle is I like to be comfortable. So I don't win too much there. And, you know, being liked and being right are not consequential. So a lot has to do with the subject. And when it comes to the subject of money, I like to win, not because of money, but simply because one of the reasons I speak to Gold Seek Radio is, as you know, the economy is in very, very dire straits. And there's a lot of people who are comfortable, you know, they say, well, the government will take care of me. And then you have all the politicians who want to be liked, you know, arguing about who's right and who's wrong. And meanwhile, those who are just getting rich, you know, the guys who are winning the game. For the listeners today, relative to the subject of money, you know, where are you? Are you the person who must win? Are you the person who must be right? Are you the person who must be comfortable or the person who must be liked? And when I kind of address people, I can almost tell who they are. Like I have a couple of friends who, nicest people on earth, you know, really like, they like you, they like them. They don't win in money by winning, they win by being likable. They just want to be liked, you know? And then there's those who are just comfortable. They say, well, you know, I don't have to worry about it. Government will take care of me. There's no sense talking to them about winning because they've already got their mind made up. And then those guys who are, you know, just trying to shut down the government and all this, or, you know, Republicans versus Democrats. So they're the guys that must be right. And I don't really want to listen to them. I just want to win. Does that kind of answer your question?
Wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but that's what makes it interesting here on Gold Seek Radio. You know, you've also gone on record saying that you're not a big fan of the fiat money system. You've got a lot of good company here with the guests on the show. You say you just don't trust much of anything but gold and silver.
Well, you know, I think the sad part is when you look at the people who must be liked and must be comfortable, they have no idea what fiat money means. You know, they're the guys just happy to get a paycheck. So with that said, you know, the reason they're going to be the biggest losers is because they don't know the difference between money. And I'm getting less and less optimistic about the future, but you have to keep an open mind. So pretty soon the government has to start printing in mass. I mean, they're only printing $1 trillion a year right now, but they will start printing more because very simply they can't handle Social Security, Medicare, all the for the people that must be comfortable. They can't. If they stiff those people, we'll have anarchy. If you finally say to these people, you know, you won't get your food stamps, they go, what? And then we'll have Syria and Egypt and all that, the rioting. So that's what's going to happen.
You know, it's funny you should mention this. I think it's very appropriate, given that tomorrow, Friday, November 1st, with potential civil unrest, if we look at the EBT SNAP card program, there's going to be about a 5.5% cut across the board nationwide. And this is one of the things that we've been talking about here on the show this week, and this is a little known fact, not being reported on the mainline media. There will be millions of people whose cards will simply no longer be usable because they're no longer reaching that threshold for their food stamp cards. So I guess the question for you is, are you expecting some blowback tomorrow?
Well, you know, thank you for telling me because I wasn't aware of that. You know, that's, you know, my food stamp card is, well, it's very good. That's not one of those government programs I monitor too closely. I monitor other things. But anyway, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I was a little late coming to the phone because I was loading up on food. I'm storing food all over the place. You know, I have five houses, so every house I'm stored up for a year. It's because I don't know if it's civil unrest or those EMPs or, you know, nuclear war or whatever. Food is going to be a major problem. And, you know, I went to military school and we studied, you know, what causes revolution. And we studied Castro versus Che Guevara. And, you know, after the Cuban Revolution, Che Guevara went into, I think, Bolivia. And he thought, oh, this is ripe for revolution. You know, the peasants are ready to revolt. And so he was out there, and he finally died in Bolivia. But he could never get the peasants to revolt. And the reason the peasants did not revolt was they were too well fed. And so is that as Jim Rogers, the guy, told me this. You know, he says the food prices are so high now that they get hungry and they get angry. And then when people are hungry and angry, then an agitator like, you know, the Arab Spring or Al-Qaeda or Hamas will come in and just whip them into a lather. So what I have found from my military background is that it's hunger that really gets people off their butts.
That's what we're reading, that the one common factor that seems to crop up every time there's civil unrest is a lack of food or expensive produce at the grocery store. We've seen this time and again in Egypt, I'm sure you'll recall, as well as Zimbabwe. One of the reasons why the mainline media is missing this big event that I'm expecting, in fact, I'm warning my subscribers as soon as tonight, I'll be warning my subscribers to watch out for civil unrest anywhere a grocery store is located tomorrow, because I think people forget that we have 50 million people who would otherwise be in soup kitchens or bread lines wrapped around every major metropolitan area. And that would, I think, shock even the people who lived through the Great Depression, who saw the actual soup kitchens and bread lines. And the reason why we don't see those things yet, although I think we're going to see it starting as soon as next week, is that we've had this food stamp program that's sort of picked up the slack, if you will. I think that system's about to fall apart here.
Well, I hope you're wrong, but I think you're right.
You can buy these 5-gallon Mylar bags, take an iron, and they seal right up with an oxygen bag in it. You can store food for 20, 30 years in these things. Insects can't get to them. Rodents, for the most part, can't get to them. We're storing food not just because we're worried about shortages, but we're also concerned about the Fukushima plumes hitting the United States, North America, even the Northern Hemisphere. We're getting reports of very contaminated food. And it's a big problem on the West Coast, as well as in Japan and in Alaska. And it, once again, it's flying under the radar screen of a lot of folks. Any thoughts there?
I've never heard of that one, but it verifies my actions. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just being a Boy Scout, just being prepared. You know, I should have, would have, could have, you know.
Folks are being vilified and ostracized in this country for simply taking some obvious measures.
So that's why, like I said, I was late because I was storing food. I was at the local guy in town here. He was a hero on the TV show Preppers, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, our favorite show.
Yes, I go, and I was at his shop, and I spent a fortune again. And you know, all it is a very high end Army Navy surplus store for yuppies.
You know, you should be on one of those episodes. I bet they'd love to have you on there.
Well, I tell you what, after I had him on one of my radio programs, his name is Tim Ralston, and after talking, this was a year ago, and since then, and I've bought 2 acres of very remote land you can't get to. It's got, I live in Arizona, so the most precious thing in Arizona is water. It's remote, and I just moved in last week. You know, I got my ammunition, my guns, my food, and, you know, my wife thinks I'm gone wacko, but I said, you know, I'd rather just not think about it. I don't want to be right or wrong. You know what I mean? I just want to win. If nothing happens, nothing happens.
But Noah's wife probably thought he was nuts too.
Yeah, and you know, like it took me 5 days to get everything moved into that cabin. Now imagine if something happens like instantaneously. You don't have 5 days to get out of town and into the mountains. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And she says, well, everybody's going to think you're strange. They already think I'm strange. I mean, she'll see my builder. You know, I say, okay, I want a steel door here. He goes, why? I said, don't ask me why. I'm going to pay you to put a steel door here. Isn't this door good enough? I said,
I'm contacting the Doomsday folks today and putting in a request for Robert Kiyosaki on the next season of Doomsday Preppers.
You know, I mean, in 1997, I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I said, your house is not an asset. And I said, savers will be losers. And I got hammered for that. And then in 2007, you know, the real estate market plummets and all this. And, you know, savers are finally going, well, why can't I save any money? I said, well, because inflation's killing you. But I also explained that there's assets and liabilities, and that's really what it was about. So my house in the mountains a liability, but it's going to be an asset if I have to run. So anyway, you know, I mean, who knows who's right and wrong? I just grow more pessimistic every day, and that's the. But also at the same time, you got to be an optimist. Also, and I'm very excited because I think it's really going to be a good time for those who are prepared. Let me give you, there's three levels of preparedness, right? Well, four levels. One is people who have no idea what's going on; they don't care. The second level are the preppers, you know, they're survivalists.
Only about 3 million people right now in the U.S.
Yeah, so they're survivalists. And then there's the thrivers. And the thrivers who are now, they're up in Arizona, we have a lot of them. They're little towns that people are banding together, and they're going to block the roads, and they're going to do all that stuff. But they're going to thrive. You know, they have food, and they have friends, and they have shelter, and they got weapons.
I've got a series for you. Did you ever by chance see Skeet Ulrich on hit TV show Jericho? You're describing an episode right out of this series, probably about 30 to 50 episodes. You won't be able to turn it off when you find it. It's available on Amazon.com. It's available on Netflix. This is a must for all the preppers in our audience, which has got to be about half of this audience. You've just described it. They locked down the whole town, and people still constantly tried to break into the town and take everything they had.
It's your neighbors who you got to watch out for. So there's kind of three levels. One is survive, one is thrive, one is prosper. And I plan on prospering. So I'm not, I just want to get the other two bases covered.
What about American Blackout? I bet you just saw the National Geographic hit TV show where it essentially shows the entire U.S. grid down, probably due to an EMP blast, as you mentioned earlier. Do you have solar panels? Do you have generators in place?
No, I mean, I haven't seen that movie.
I'll forward a link to your assistant there. And this is the entire movie free on YouTube. Who knows how long it'll last. They'll probably pull it soon. But it probably was their top documentary. It's a docudrama. It shows five or six families trying to survive with no electricity for about two to three weeks in the United States. And the blogosphere is abuzz on this docudrama.
I'm not prepared to that level.
It wouldn't cost you that much. You know, I've got, we picked up 10 solar panels, 100-watt solar panels, a few deep cycle batteries, and a simple charger from China. You know, I mean, instead of $800, you can get them now on eBay for $50. Just for a couple $1,000s, you can have a good sound little backup that'll give you a computer, TV, internet, keep a hot plate, you know, and things of that nature.
Now, the thing that I put my money into are machine guns and ammunition.
I don't have enough stuff to need machine gun and ammunition.
I was a Marine in Vietnam, and you don't want to go to a gunfight without a machine gun, as they say.
Right.
Well, they're pretty exciting, so they just keep hammering it out there.
Right. Well, you know, you've got competition there. The Department of Homeland Security just purchased a billion rounds of hollow point ammunition, several tanks, and armored personnel carriers. So they're expecting some unrest, and a lot of folks are pointing to, once again, tomorrow with the SNAP card situation.
Wow, I didn't know that. You know, I've been a wacko now since probably 1983. I talked to my wife because I met her in 84, and she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Look, I'm just getting out of Dodge," and she didn't know why. But I read a book called The Grunch of Giants by Dr. R. Buckminster Fuller in 1983. A very small book. And I reread it in 2007, and it's just like this, nothing's changed. The same thing's going on.
You know, Dr. Fuller was the creator of the Buckyball as well as the geodesic dome like Epcot Center in Florida.
And also the U.S. Pavilion at the Expo 67 World. Now, I was a student of his, so every time I listened to him, you know, I was going, holy mackerel. And so when I met my wife in 84, you know, she really could. I said, look, I'm just getting out of Dodge. I can't do what I'm doing anymore. And that's when I started teaching because I could see this crisis coming.
I didn't start to see this until after 9/11. That was my wake-up call, and I've been pounding the table ever since. So you were more than 20 years ahead of most folks. And I think a lot of people just gave up on this doomsday talk when they saw that the year 2000 bug didn't come to pass. But
the Y2K.
Yes, Y2K, exactly. I think that disappointed a lot of folks, and it kind of became stigmatized. But that's changing.
Well, I should hope so. I mean, You know, the worst is coming within the next 5 years. I'm afraid we're going to collapse from one thing or the other, but we will collapse. There's no way of preventing it right now.
Yeah, the U.S. dollar agrees with you. We're seeing considerable breakdown there. It had every chance to rally for 3 years in a row, and there's considerable technical weakness in the U.S. dollar, the greenback now struggling against the euro in particular. And that, I think, is an ominous sign that may indicate really serious political, geopolitical, and economic strife here in the U.S.
Well, if you read that book, it's a late book out called Currency Wars by Jim Rickards.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a fabulous book to read because it's not just the U.S. dollar. It's called The Race to the Bottom, where every country wants to devalue their dollar just so they can kind of bankrupt their neighbors, but they also bankrupt the citizenship, their own citizens. So Rickards' book, Currency Wars, great, very good reading. I interviewed him yesterday, and he was not optimistic, per se.
No, I can imagine.
But I think the biggest thing I could warn people is this, is right, from my indications, the people in the stock market, you know, the guys who have 401ks and IRAs full of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, they're the next target. They're going to get wiped out. You know, because the last target was 2007. It was the homeowners. Now they're going to get the retirement plans.
No, I think you're right. I think, you know, with rehypothecation, the wake-up call, the warning signal, the shot across the bow was clearly the MF Global fiasco, as well as Cyprus there in Europe. I think those two events, then, of course, the government of Poland took the entire populace and lifted them upside down and emptied half of their pension pocketbooks without any promise, you know, for future repayment. So, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall. But folks are too busy just trying to get through the business day to pay much attention to what's going on.
Yeah, they're watching the Jerry Springer show.
They're too busy watching American Idol or what have you. But, you know, but there are some folks waking up, and that's why, you know, we're trying to get the message out there. So as we wind down this interesting discussion, I wonder if you could give people your outlook on the precious metals. I forgot to mention it. My guess is you're still accumulating after about 30 years.
Right. What I got rid of were my precious metal ETFs, because I don't trust paper anymore, and I stuck with all my hard assets. I think the good thing, I'll just give the good news for people, if you're prepared, you'll actually do better. For example, when I saw this crisis coming, about 1997, I started buying gold and silver like a wild man. And back then, gold was, I think, $295 an ounce or something. And so when people say, well, how do you feel about it coming down? I said, I'm still up $1,000. Give me a break. And then my machine guns keep going up because you can't build another machine gun.
I'd like to know what asset you're holding that's up 3-4-fold. There's not too many stocks, unless you were just one of those lucky Google shareholders. Apple, one of these companies, most people long since sold their shares. They were shaken out. In the final analysis, it really protects your purchasing power, precious metals.
Well, I think you should get some, definitely. I've been, you know, I think there's 11 years worth of silver left. So when you get that kind of stat, I think there's about 14 of gold out of the ground. So when you look at that, you know, I mean, and then the cost of mining gold today is around $1,100 an ounce, depending on where you're mining it. So even at 13, you're giving a $200 premium on it.
Well, I just read an article that claims that there's only 1 billion ounces of silver above ground, whereas 30 to 40 years ago, there used to be 20 to 30 billion ounces of silver, whereas now there's 6 or 7 billion ounces of gold, which means there's actually several fold more gold in reserves above ground. But the catch is that there's a considerable amount of silver mined each year, but now they're claiming that that 1 billion ounces in production annually is being consumed at the pace that it's coming out of the ground.
Well, it's always been consumed, and that's why there's only what, 12 years left, I think.
No, you're exactly right. Reclaiming the silver and gold in cell phones, as well as system boards on computers and virtually any other electronic product, you can take a cell phone apart and that little keypad that has the gold on it, I mean, that is a considerable amount of 18 to 24 karat gold you can send in for a few dollars or take down to your local scrap yard.
Well, I think that's the point. You know, it's not doom and gloom. It's actually doom and boom. If you're prepared for it, you're going to do very well. Now, you should have a gun in the meantime, but other than that, I'm a former Marine. I did two tours in Vietnam, and it doesn't do much good.
Well, you need to have...
Anyway, the whole point here is this, is that you can do very well if you prepare for it, but I would be very concerned about being in the stock market.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if they don't continue this monetary stimulus for the next few months, at least until the end of Dr. Bernanke's tenure there at the Federal Reserve. So we might even surprise folks on the long side. I wouldn't go too heavily into bearish funds at this point, bearish ETFs. I'd watch the market carefully before that. But I do agree with you, the end game here is not going to be pretty.
No, I think, and I don't think we've got a few, we don't have many years left. So that's why I speak to you guys, and I've been preparing this since 83. I think if people read Dr. Fuller's book called The Grunch of Giants, R. Buckminster Fuller, and if you can read it, he's pretty hard to read. It's a very small book, but you'll say nothing has changed. And instead of Obama, there's Reagan, and instead of Bernanke, there's Volcker. That's the only difference.
The same dogmas and ideologies.
He mentions Glass-Steagall, he mentions Eisenhower warning of us of the military-industrial complex and all this. And basically what it is the heist of the U.S. government. And that's what's happened. The Fed is not federal, it's a cartel of international bankers.
You know, I listened to an interesting character yesterday who referred to the Federal Reserve. He said it's no more federal than Federal Express.
Yeah, that's a good saying. I would say that's true. And I always ask the question, who pays Bernanke his... Who signs Bernanke's paycheck? You know, nobody really knows. And that's why I go, who's paying it? You know, who's Bernanke? Hopefully knows something.
You know, 1913, the Fed's tenure year, about 100 years, and they've essentially ruined the U.S. dollar. And some people believe that they've transferred most of the wealth offshores. And apparently 10 foreign banks own the Federal Reserve, and they're not known for the most part. We don't know who owns our Federal Reserve, and that's against the Constitution of the United States.
That's correct. Kind of the good news is, let's talk about records, you know, of currency wars. He says the gold is stored in New York. That's why when the Germans wanted their gold back, they said, wait 7 years.
Well, Robert Kiyosaki, we want to thank you for your thoughts today and continued success.
Thank you for having me on your program. I appreciate it.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. There's a topic I've been meaning to discuss for about 8 weeks now. You'll recall in late August the media outrage at McDonald's workers taking to the streets and demanding a $15 an hour minimum wage. Anil Cavuto interview with former McDonald's CEO Ed Renzi portrayed this as a desperate attempt of unions to attract more members. He emphatically discussed how profit margins at McDonald's franchises are under 5%, and wages make up over 30% of overhead. He asserts that doubling the minimum wage would kill jobs and wipe out 15 to 20% of small businesses. If the minimum wage were to rise in isolation of other wages and salaries in the economy, it would likely have devastating consequences. But that's not going to happen. Just as the gold and silver prices continue to be managed and suppressed, so do wages and salaries. Wages across the board, including the minimum wage, are going to skyrocket when the artificial lid that has been holding wages down finally erupts. If you know anyone that truly attempts to live on minimum wage without participating in any government assistance programs, it's not realistic. When the real cost of goods and services are rising at an annual rate of 4 and 5 times the acknowledged inflation rate of roughly 2%, it doesn't take long for someone trying to exist on minimum wage to suffocate. And that's exactly what's happening now. The former McDonald's CEO was outraged that workers who are suffocating would dare demand a wage that might barely keep them alive. He'd rather play the political class warfare card and blame the unions, or blame the workers for trying to make a career on what he says are supposed to be entry-level jobs. He'd rather blame the government for failing to create better jobs. The fact is, despite assertions to the contrary, the government doesn't create jobs. The government is not the engine of society. This is not a union issue, and it's certainly not appropriate to demonize the very workers who are the backbone of the service industry throughout the country. The cry for a $15 an hour minimum wage is a symptom of a much larger issue that is beginning to force its way into the mainstream consciousness. An issue that Alan Greenspan started when he began tinkering with COLA, or cost of living adjustment measurements, to keep inflation artificially low so he could artificially limit the growth of increases in Social Security, military pay, and other government payments, and thus prolong the entitlement Ponzi scheme while slowly suffocating workers, Social Security recipients, and military personnel for nearly two decades, with payments that claimed to be in line with the, quote, official inflation, but just never seemed to match the real inflation that existed within the economy. The cry for a $15 an hour minimum wage is the cry of the canary in the coal mine. The canary is the average worker who stands naked in an environment of noxious financial fumes that no longer support life. These canaries, whose singing will ultimately be heard and eventually understood, will begin to destroy the unsustainable illusion of inflation at 2%. Political and class warfare will be used initially to make these individuals out to be unreasonable, but their cries are telling a larger financial truth. And that is, when inflation can no longer be artificially contained, as some suggest will erupt later next year, all wages are likely to begin rising dramatically. Not for a better lifestyle, but to maintain a barely sustainable lifestyle. $15 is probably a conservative estimate. The cry for higher wages, the growth of government programs like Social Security, food stamps, and numerous other subsidies aren't just the expansion of entitlement programs. They are a direct result of Fed chairmen, presidents, congressmen, and senators plugging the economic dike with fingers and toes in the form of subsidies to mask the very inflation their policies have been creating. Unfortunately, they are about to run out of fingers and toes to stick in the dike. And when they do, the immediate result is going to be a dose of economic reality that nobody will like. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter @ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.